Blog Talk Radio.
Don't forget to punch in the area codes 323 and 812.
Actually, 812 just popped up a few seconds ago, so 812, if you can hear us, you're live.
Yes, sir. This is Johnny Walker. Thank you very much for having me.
Nice to have you on.
Yeah.
And I think we also have Johnny Walker, who he is.
Yeah, Johnny Walker is the filmmaker. He made a deflower with a Robert
Zidar
and me.
Yeah, the movie you were
me.
In with Bobby.
And
yeah.
a Super Hell 3
with John Link, you're very confused. You worked with Robert Zidar in two movies that were both directed by Johnny Walker. One is deflowered and one is Super Hell 3 Dreams of Horror.
That's correct. That's correct.
Wasn't that what I said? What?
I said John, you didn't.
This is Edward. This is Edward Exion, co-host of the John Link Show, and I wanted to formally introduce Johnny Walker, the filmmaker. Yes, and I'm Edward Exion. I play Mr. Hush, and I'm in Mold and Sea of Dust. I've done about 70 horror pictures in the past 10 years. But I acted in Johnny Walker's Super Hell 3 Dreams of Horror, which also features Robert Zadar. But let's let Mr. Johnny Walker, filmmaker from Ohio, is that where you're located,
Indiana.
John?
Indiana.
I'm right across the bridge from Louisville, Kentucky. We got Derby coming up.
Gee, how are them tornadoes out there?
I didn't see any tornadoes. The tornadoes, you know, all through my life, they just avoid me. yeah. I don't know why. You know, this thing called God tends to smile on me, but he sure seems to, so, or she. So.
I hate to interject. We won't talk about Mr. Zadar, but I do hope and trust, because I haven't seen the finished product yet, I hope the footage that I got New Jersey filmmaker John Arricchio to shoot of me and John Link for Scene Super Hell 3 Dreams of worked out okay for you.
Well, mister, you should have seen it. I tried to send it. John, you've seen it, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I will send you my mailing address. I will do that.
Okay.
And I want to just thank you publicly before we talk about Mr. Zadar, because at the time you were shooting Super Hell 3, you had invited John Link and I to travel out to your area. I was perfectly willing to drive.
Well, it was actually in the Gettysburg area, which is closer.
Oh, that's right. But my fiance Susan Palermo, who wrote and performs the opening song of this show, "Zombies Are Everywhere," that's her singing. She came down with terminal cancer at that time, and you were kind enough to. I said I'd have to opt out of your production, which features Mr. Zadar, and you said no. I could shoot my scenes and get them out to you from our New Jersey location, and I'm very grateful to you for that. Extremely grateful. Aside from my thanks, I'd love to hear what you have to say about Mr. Robert Zadar, our dear friend, who we lost on March 30th at the age of 64.
Johnny.
Yeah, but I've thought a lot about it. I'll talk about anything you want to know about. But Bobby was in my life for 13 years, not as long as some. And I mean, I stayed the night at his house, which used to be his mother's house. And from what I understand, he kind of, you know, when his mother passed on, that was a big thing to him. I think I met up, if I'm correct, 7 years after that fact, and he was still kind of torn up about it. So, but I went through a lot with Robert, you know, in the short time I consider it. I'm just thinking, I'm like, geez, was it really 13 years? You know, it seems too short. I loved him. He was a force, and I'll never forget him. And I'm going to talk about whatever we want to talk about.
I should make it clear, because we have uninitiated listeners, and I should have made a more formal introduction, or John Link should have. But Robert Zadar, of course, of course, for everybody listening, Robert Zadar was, we lost on March 30th. Robert Zadar did a lot of movies. I think in excess of 70 movies during his career as an actor. He was a military veteran. He was in the United States Marine Corps, I believe, right? And
I don't know anything about
that. I think he was a cop, too.
Well, he had a scholarship. He played football for, I think, Arizona State. And he was in the armed forces, and he was a police officer, and then he became an actor.
Don't forget Chippendale's dancer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was a Chippendale dancer, too.
But he acted in a lot of movies, but Of course, he's most famous for playing the eponymous role in William Lustig and Larry Cohen's Maniac Cop series. There were three movies in that series, and they were talking about making a part four. They were negotiating doing a part four at the time when Bobby died. I mean, his friends called him Bobby. But if you're into horror and grindhouse films, the notorious Maniac Cop movies of the 80s, Robert Zadar made his mark on that. I remember I saw the original Maniac Cop with my friend Neil Lafferty, and we saw it at a theater which was on Grindhouse Theater, not even on 42nd Street. It was on Delancey Street, and my friend Neil went there because it was one of the, it was like the last theater left in New York where you could still smoke in the theater. There were ashtrays at the back of the seats. Chain smoker, my friend Neil. I haven't seen him in live. But we went to see like a quadruple feature of Grindhouse horror pictures, and Maniac Cop was one of them. And it was really a very oddball, transgressive, unforgettable, bizarre movie. William Lustig's movies are, and most of Larry Cohen's screenplays are.
We had a world famous, well, no world famous, but at least in the, some people know what Wild and Woolly Video was, a big video store here in Louisville, and like I first started going there, they had like a few hundred VHS tapes you could rent or whatever, but it, you know, it was for the enthusiasts, for the grindhouse sort of thing. And kind of blossomed into the mainstream as they went along. But anyway, just shut down not too long ago, and I did get their copy of Maniac Cop, which has all sorts of... Everyone who worked there liked it, and you can tell by all the stickers on it. But, you know, it's... anyway,
yeah,
it's a sentimental thing.
I have yet to see the Maniac Cop pictures.
It's a great series, and I will say, William Lustig, of course, not only did he make the Maniac Cop series, he made the movie Maniac with Joe Spinell, but he's close friends with Sam Raimi, and much like the Evil Dead series, in my opinion, I mean, and you know, the people who are, let us not forget, we also have our producer, who's also a filmmaker, Cameron Scott, who actually got to know Bobby Zadar pretty well. But I personally feel part two, Maniac Cop, Badge of Silence, was the best of the trilogy.
I agree. Yeah, I got to agree. The only thing that was missing was good old Tom Atkins. Much like Bobby kind of made every movie he was in. But, yeah, other than that, yeah, Maniac Cop 2 was my favorite of the trilogy. I wasn't a big fan of the third one. I thought the third one felt a bit rushed, but... The three of them together is a great trilogy. It's just too bad we didn't see a fourth.
Indeed. Bruce Campbell's only in the first one, right?
No, I think Bruce is in one and two.
He's in the second one for about for spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen it. So cover your ears.
Like
but
recap of the first.
Yeah, it's like a recap, and he's in like a one scene, and then of course Bobby shows up and kills him. So
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Like, oop, there you go, you're done.
The movies are old enough now where the spoilers don't really count, but yes, Bruce Campbell came back. But much the way Jamie Lee Curtis ruefully agreed to come back for Halloween Resurrection, starring my dear friend and brother, brother in the business, Brad Laurie, my co-star, Mr. Hutch, Jamie Lee Curtis came back for Halloween Resurrection, provided they kill her and kill her good and dead in the early part of the movie. Bruce Campbell agreed to be in the sequel, but he wanted to get killed. He didn't want to come back for any sequels beyond part two.
I hear it, yeah. It is probably
that sounds like Bruce.
That's some credit for at least for doing that. You know, and like I said, if only we had Mr. Atkins in part two. But part two was just, I think they learned their trade and got to understand the character of Matt Cordell better. He's Zadar's character.
Well, there are some beloved Robert Zadar movies, and I know he personally, the first time I flew to Chicago and stayed at his house, he was particularly proud of Blood Money, which was originally called The Killer's Edge, and it was shot in the '80s, and that movie is it's so eighties. It's very enjoyable and has Wings Hauser, yeah, is the other is the good guy. Robert Zidar is the bad guy, whatever. But yeah, it's I love that movie.
But what kind of trouble are you in a film when Wings Hauser is the good guy? When Wings Hauser is the good guy, you know what you're kind of in for, you know?
That's quite a twist. Yeah. That Wings Hauser is the good guy, absolutely.
Yeah, let me do some reminiscences of Bobby. I remember he directed the first night of the deflowered shoot because you were too exhausted.
I have no recollection. I've never been too exhausted.
Well, I remember you hadn't slept for like 3 or 4 nights.
Oh, you just... No, I think just at one point he like his orders were louder than mine, so he took over. Yeah.
Hey, and not to interrupt, guys, but we do have another caller. If you want to bring him in,
Dutch.
This is this is Barry Coth 323. Debbie, you're on.
Hi, everybody.
Yay. I love you so much, Debbie Dutch. Debbie Dutch, my co-star and John Link's co-star. Yeah, actually, she's the star. We're her co-stars in Hollywood Warriors. I know.
And Bobby Zidar would have been great in it. You know, just to mention, you know, how I knew him, I was talking to John. You know, actually, I was coming back from Vegas, and we were talking about him. I've known Bobby for at least, 25 years, because he was always here in L.A., and I would see him at the film markets, and he was friends with one of my exes, and they actually were in competition together. Robert Zidar, my ex's Sonny Landham, he played the big Indian in Predator, so they were actually really good friends. So we actually would hang out together, and Bobby was always so just such a wonderful guy, always happy. I never ever really saw him mad. Now, that's just me. You know, maybe you guys have seen him, man. I know John was on a film with him and everything. But he was always in such good spirits. And we just became really close friends. Whenever I would see him, he would, like, Debbie and hang out. And then we would do conventions together at the Chiller Theater and hang out and go to the parties together. And he was just always so... fun, always fun,
yeah.
In my experience of him. And then I just wanted to share that we, I actually, in the early 90s, I guess it was around, I want to say 1994, I was asked to be in a movie with Bobby. I was supposed to play his girlfriend. And we were so excited about that because I don't know how it happened, whether he wanted me to play his girlfriend or I forget the name of the director, but at the time he was very hot. It wasn't a Roger Corman film. It was somebody else, of course, an indie, and it was a non-union film. Well, unfortunately, I was starred in a non-union film in 93 called Death Dancers. And it was kind of a big deal and everything. But unfortunately, it was non-union and Screen Actors Guild. He had, brought me up on charges because they thought they were missing out on some money and stuff, you know, because I also was associate producer of the movie. And, of course, I got off of everything, off of all the charges. However, I was on probation. So... Bobby Zidar at the time, because, you know, that's one thing you guys, I think you kind of know about it, but when you're in the union, when you do a non-union film and you become kind of like a celebrity, you're kind of on the radar of Screen Actors Guild, and they just want to go after you. I don't
know.
Can
you
know,
fight core?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's I'm getting to this with Bobby. So anyway, so I was going to play his girlfriend, and Bobby had already been up on charges because Bobby worked constantly. Bobby Sidar,
right.
Robert Sidar, he never stopped doing a film, and he didn't care what was union, non-union. You know, as
right.
long as he got his money. That's one thing about Bobby. He won it, and he got paid well. He did, but he was worth every penny of it. Nobody was like Bobby Sidar. Nobody. His look, his personality, and his acting. Oh, he could just play the meanest, toughest guy, and yet he was the sweetest teddy bear in the world. But anyway, to get back to my experience with him, this one film that we were going to work on, I said to Bobby, you know, he said, Debbie, I want you to, you know, play this part. It was really a cool part. And we were going to shoot it out on a yacht and everything. And I said, Bobby, I can't do it. I said, I want to do it so badly, you know, I'm on probation and you're being watched. He said, the heck, you know, I won't say what he said, the heck with them, so to speak,
Debbie,
you know.
Debbie, be sure our listeners know you're talking about probation with the union, and you were on probation.
Right, I was on probation. I was on probation. They were watching me to not do any non-union films. Here I would be co-starring as Bobby Sidar's girlfriend in this movie that was going to be really, I can't remember the name of the movie, but I'm sure it was all over the place. And I said, oh, I'm going to get really busted this time. And then they fine you. I got off scot-free, you know, from when, and Bobby went financial core, so they can't touch him. He said, the heck with them. But I didn't want to go financial core at that time. So I gave the part to my girlfriend, Sheila. And she's friends with me on Facebook, and it was just like one big happy family. So it was a funny experience, you know, back in the day. And then about 5 years ago, so after that, Bobby and I would keep in contact. You know, from time to time he would call me, and I will have to tell you, he called me sometimes late at night, and he was in quite a state, and he would be very, very sad. I do have to tell you that. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say why or under what circumstances he would call me, you know. But it was sad, you know, as the years progressed. And I would just like encourage him, Bobby, please come on, you could do it, you know. And about 5 years ago. I want to say about 5 years ago. And I was in Palm Beach at the time. We had a little place down there. And he was actually living, I think, in Florida. It was really funny. And he was doing a film. And I think now I remember. The film was called Ticks, T-I-C-K-S, Ticks. It was a horror film. And Bobby gets me on the phone. He goes, Debbie, I want you to be in this movie. I want you to contact, I can't remember the guy's name, and we're friends on Facebook too, but he's kind of a big director, a cool guy. Send your picture right now. I want you to send a picture to me. And it was just so wonderful. He promoted me for the movie. I was going to be in the movie with him, and then I don't know what the heck happened, but
yeah,
it just never sort of happened.
Like that.
Do you remember that movie, Ticks?
Well, I don't know. I know that he promised me a part. Well, he wasn't directing the movie, but he pretty much assured me a part in The Lost Girls. Like, headshots, Johnny, headshots. So we went and got some headshots and blah, 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 passing them around. Yeah, nothing came of it. But I love the guy for, like, the effort and trying.
Oh, yeah. I know.
I think the most interesting thing about Bobby Sidar, anybody that's seen his movies, I mean, he was a... Visually, I mean, he was a big, scary-looking guy. And if you didn't know him personally and saw him at a convention or saw him in the hotel, you might be afraid to approach him because he was just so big and scary looking. But then if you deem to talk to him, he really was a very affable, almost goofy guy with his sense of humor. And he was really fun and very nice. I mean, as I said, I had talked to him and introduced myself as a grindhouse horror actor and had expressed a desire that someday we would work together and made a suggestion we should connect it on Facebook. He instantly connected to me on Facebook. And we had the pleasure of working together on two movies. And, you know, I was really hoping. Most recently, when we did John Walker's movie, Super Hell 3, Dreams of Horror, we're both in that. But recently we shot in Virginia Easter Sunday, which is now dedicated to his memory. But the premiere of Easter Sunday will be out in, I forget which convention, but it'll be in West Virginia on Friday, October 23rd. I'm going to try to be there for it. But I was truly hoping we'd all be together to celebrate it. I know that Cameron Scott, I wouldn't want to have our producer Cameron Scott miss out on telling any of his story, but he got to know Bobby pretty well at a convention in Indiana, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was at Horror Hound, and I want to say that was in 2008 or 2009. I can't quite remember. But I was doing promotions on my first film, and he had... I distinctly remember when my table was the first time I had a table at a convention where I wasn't just, you know, going to the convention as a fan. And I had Ari Lehman, the first Jason, on one side, and then Bobby was on the other side. And a mutual friend of ours, Jim O'Rear, had introduced us. And I just remember Bobby singing to me all weekend long. And it was just the greatest thing. It was the most fun time in the world because, you know, I always knew him as Max Cordell from Maniac Cop. And then one of my other personal favorites was Soul Taker, and with him and Joe Estevez. And, you know, we just sat and traded stories back and forth. I mean, he was just, you know, like we've already said on the show, you know, he was such a big guy and a kind of a scary-looking guy. And, you know, when he wanted to, he could look the part. But when he smiled, you know what I mean? He was just one of those guys who was so jovial and so fun. And I just remember him singing, like, show tunes and stuff to me and a couple of my friends at the table. And this, we kind of became pals, you know, just trading stories, on-set stories and whatnot. And I was always thankful to Jim for introducing the two of us, you know, on a friendly kind of level. But then it was a couple of years later when we went back to Horror Hound. I want to say it was probably around about 2011. And it was one of those things. I always considered myself a fan first and a filmmaker second, I guess, at least at that time. And to have, you know, him remember who I was when I was just like, Bobby was the guy who was the best way to describe him was larger than life, you know. Cause
oh, definitely. That is like just a perfect, Cameron, perfect description.
Yeah. Because, you know, he was, at least the in the short amount of time I got to know him, he was just a fun guy. Always telling jokes, you know, singing the show tunes and whatnot. It was just good times.
You know what the important thing is about Bobby, why he was so much fun to be with in this business? There are certain performers and actors who feel they've settled into making horror movies. Bobby loved the genre. He really dug these movies. He dug the business, and he was really happy to be a horror film star and an icon in the field.
I got to bring up the sensitive left. I didn't mean to interrupt or anything, but we talked about Neil Young on a few occasions. Yeah, we were both big fans, so he had a sensitive side to him. So sorry to interrupt you, Ed.
That silence. Yeah, I remember Bobby said that any method, any technique that works at the time is method acting.
Yeah, and that's correct.
Yeah,
that's very correct. And he was a great actor. He definitely was. He brought reality to the screen, but then he also brought that, you know, that it factor, you know, that you can't really put your finger on it, but what makes an actor a star instead of just an actor. And he just had it. I mean, he just had it.
Well, I think a lot of that was part of just his personality, of having that larger-than-life personality. Some people are just, you know, it's like you said, you can't put your finger on it. Some people have it, and some people, don't. And you just, he had it. Quite simply, he had it.
I'll miss that guy forever. He was great.
I mean, he didn't just act in like the grindhouse movies too. He did a lot of Hollywood films and a lot of television appearances too. As Debbie said, he never stopped acting. He was always working on.
Oh yeah, purpose. He was always hustling. Always
he
hustling.
He was on some 80s sitcoms. I'd love to see him in Three's Company though. You know, or Gilligan's Island. he kind of should have been, but.
Have him pop up in the middle of Full House as, like, the babysit
the twins.
Yeah,
everybody, just like Jell-O, there should always be room for him, So, I mean, if he's
right,
there,
right.
People should have utilized him a little more. I know he was in a lot of stuff, but he sure could have been in more. You don't have a bad film. You got Robert Zadar in it,
Yeah, Johnny, you have
that era,
outtakes of Bobby, don't you?
Okay, yeah, I was going to bring that up, next interjection or whatever, and ironically I was thinking, just earlier today, I remember, I think it was in 2002 when he was doing a radio show and he told me he was going to plug Super Hell and like the first one, and I remember how excited I was. God, he was just a good friend. But yeah, I was gonna do this film with him. I won't call it the last because I was expecting the guy to be around a little more, And but I couldn't get a hold. I called his number and I couldn't get a hold of him. So I got a hold of Jimmy Decker, which he was also in Super Hell 3. I did his convention a few times, and anyway, kind of his pseudo manager, whatever you want to call it. And he informed me that Bobby was in the hospital, and I kind of told him what role I had in mind. It wouldn't be too, exhausting, use too much. He'd pretty much just sit down and say lines. I wanted him to be a cult leader. So I thought he'd be a great cult leader. And I've never seen it, Bob Zadar as a cult leader. So anyway, that was the plan, and I think that was a day or two before he passed, and I really hope that bug was put into his ear and it put a smile on his face. That's my true hope. I just hope he was happy about doing it before.
Well, don't
before
you have
that.
Outtakes? You saved the
I have many, many tapes, many outtakes, and I plan to put together a tribute role for him somehow into a film. I plan to do, I have the acorn that will grow a mighty oak, as Ed Wood said, and as I'm hoping, so.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, remember what Ed Wood did with Plan 9. He had that precious footage of Lugosi from Tomb of the Vampire that he never made, and he turned that into Plan 9 from Outer Space.
I do think that Bobby would probably totally approve, too.
Yeah.
Oh, he is, I know he would. Are you kidding me? He's smiling down. He is so happy about that.
Yeah, you give him a way to live beyond the grave.
I gave all I could, too, I guess the GoFundMe thing or whatever to have him. I want a proper place to visit, because I'm still gonna go see Bobby even though he's gone. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna talk to him. He's a real true friend. That's how I've always thought about him. And the money I put towards all of that. that's payment for this last film, Bob. That's payment for this film. And, I hope people see it and it makes them happy. So.
Do you care to comment about the character he played in Super Hell 3? He played Granny Bob?
Yeah, he played Granny Bob in the first one. He wasn't in the second one, but yeah, I reprised it in the third.
Perhaps you'd like to describe Granny Bob to our listeners who might haven't seen the movie.
All right, yeah, he played Granny Bob, and it was actually, I remember talking about it that first night, and he kind of came up with it, and he was like, John, I know what you're going for. You kind of got a David Lynch brain, you know, I had something like that going on, and he's like, you want to get weird, you want to get a little, you know, out there, make people think, I've got this character, and so, you know, he comes forth, and I kind of, like, subconsciously, maybe it was something like his sixth eye. He just wanted to live out, you know, for shock value. But it's, you know, it's more than that. You know, it's always kind of been more than that. I look back on it, like, and I look at him, and, you know, I think that's Bobby. I love that guy. You know, I remember when we were doing these things and how I felt and us talking together, and that you can't buy that stuff. You can't buy it.
It's interesting that Bobby, you know, had been a cop in real life, and not only did he make a name for himself playing Matt Cordell, the maniac cop, but he played a lot of cops. In fact, the movie that I'm in with him, the last movie with him, Easter Sunday, he plays Sheriff Aiken, and I play an exorcist, Angus Bradley, and we're both trying to track down a serial killer dressed as the Easter Bunny who's hacking off people's heads and carrying them around in an Easter basket. And unfortunately, it's a very good movie. I can't wait for it to come out. So I think it's going to be one of my better pictures, but unfortunately, Bobby and I didn't have any scenes together, but he actually investigates my murder. At the risk of a spoiler, I get killed and he's investigating my murder. So we are connected at least that much, but I was truly hoping we'd have our moments together on the screen at some point.
You never were in a film, Ed, with Bobby?
So I was in two movies with him, but we're never on camera at the same time.
Oh.
Right.
I'm in Super Hell 3, Dreams of Horror, written and directed and produced by Johnny Walker on the line with us. Right.
Now, how many movies was Bobby in?
Close to 100.
Oh, man.
It's counting TV work, was over 120.
Wow.
Yeah, that's exactly what I read, too, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Did he leave any...
Well, he has the great honor that two of his movies were also featured. I think Soul Taker, I forget which other one. Two of them were featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is always a great honor. It's like winning an Oscar.
Wow. That's amazing.
The other one, Soul Taker, and the other one, because I'm a MST3K kind of aficionado, was a, unless I'm wrong, was called Future War.
You're right.
Right. Yes.
They were both featured during the same season too. It might have been like season 6 of Mystery Science Theater 3000. They were both featured at the same time.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I know that he worked so hard to create his legacy, and the fact that we're all together from our hearts to talk about this wonderful man who suffered so much over, you know, his issues that he was battling with, his demons that he was battling with, shows and proves, attests the fact that he has created a legacy, and it's going to live on forever.
I'm glad you brought it up into the right context, Debbie, because I didn't want to dwell on Bobby's health problems, but, you know, I wanted to concentrate more on the fun aspects and his performances, but it is a fact that he is an inspiration that, you know, Robert Zadar had a lot, Bobby had a lot of health problems, and you know, his...
Well, Ed, I mean, so did Edgar Allan Poe, so did Ernest Hemingway, so do all the great people. You've got something inside you.
He never let it affect his creativity or his sense of humor. He was very cavalier about his health issues, and he put his heart in these pictures and these movies that he did.
How much time do we have left?
We have about 4 minutes.
Okay, well, who has a burning thing to share? Because we want to make sure that...
Jeez,
6 minutes left, I believe.
Abby?
Yeah, well, no, I pretty much, like, shared what I had to say, you know, because he was kind of like a big brother to me, but I always respected him for his tremendous talent and his ability to just to work as an artist, which is something that is so great in this town, you know, because as the years go by, you know, with all of the, and the fact that he went financial core and went through the issues of the union that I brought up, and that's kind of how we got brought together, you know, over that. And it's quite, I don't want to say a trial, but, you know, it's almost like trial by fire to be a successful actor in Hollywood. And he did it. He really, really did it. And it's kind of like, you know, how Frank Sinatra said, I'm going to do it my way. Well, that was Bobby. That's what I can say. He did it his way.
Well, he really
There's no
followed,
other way to do it, really.
He really followed what I called the Sid Haig rule. Because when I was friends with Sid Haig before I started acting. And when I started that, when I decided to become an actor 10 years ago, I'd been a film critic. That's how I got to know Sid. I gave him some very positive reviews. And I asked him for some tips and what can help me break into the business. And he said, look, if you get on the set, and he could, you could be the next Laurence Olivier, but if you're a prick and you're hard to work with, you're not going to get anywhere. He said, really?
Is so true.
He said if you are helpful and fun to be with and enjoyable to work with, he said, you're going to get work all the time. And that's why Bobby worked a lot. Because he, like I said, he put his heart and soul into every movie he made, no matter how minuscule the budget might have been. I mean, John Walker could verify on this. I mean, he always enjoyed getting every role that he got, and he treated it like it was solid gold. He treated it like it was Hamlet, and he put his heart and soul into everything.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think he was kind of with me on the fact that, like, what, you know, you do it your way. Like, I mean, that's basically the same thing. He did it his way, and, you know, as far as the budget goes and getting financing and getting all these people's hands into your work when you want to have control and you know what you want to portray, there's more heart in an independent film. I don't know. That's just my outlook of it. But there will be a final Bob Vidar film, and it will be comprised of older footage. So people have that.
Oh, that's so beautiful. This is the tribute that I bet you he's going to orchestrate from heaven. Because
ma'am, I sure hope.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're right.
In another actor's hands, Matt Cordell could have been just another slasher movie, but he took that maniac cop character very seriously and helped him help that character develop some really not quite arcs of the movie. He's actually a really fascinating villain, making a tremendous transformation.
Well, John, the last time you saw, you were sharing with me, the last time you saw Bobby, he was in a lot of pain, right?
Well, that was on Deflowered. The last time I saw Bobby was a few years later at a Schiller convention. And
oh, yeah, that's
much
the one
better.
I was there. That's when I saw him. I was at that Schiller. That was 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe it was, yeah.
It was 2007.
Yeah.
And Frank Stallone was there. Everybody was there at that show.
Yeah.
He sure struggled a lot. And, I'm real glad that, you know, my good friend who, like, I just care so much about him, and I'm just glad he's not in pain. He'll never be in pain again.